Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper.
Sometimes I do pre-show stretches. I don't ever get any credit for it because obviously it's pre-show and no one sees it. But like, I feel like I've given a lot of effort into this thing and not really getting any return.
What do you mean? Like, what kind of stretches? Like vocal techniques or like physical preparedness?
Yeah, no, both, I would say. I mean, to be at the top of my game.
Kind of a Tybo thing.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Is that the first thing that came to your mind was Tybo?
That's all I got.
Here's the deal. I've made more than one reference to Tybo, and apparently it's out. Like, nobody knows anything about it. I mean, I have to find someone like my age range or older. Otherwise, Tybo's nothing. Like,
what's the current thing? I have no idea.
Brazilian butt.
That is always the current thing.
Dad's part-time job is an exercise namer.
Well, when I'm up overnight praying, sometimes I see the commercials.
Let's call that suntan bicep. Go.
So what is the popular exercise? It was it's CrossFit, right? It was P90X. Now there's a CrossFit. Is that on its way out? Trevor Pinnegar.
That's like real though. That's not like on TV though. CrossFit.
No, that's true.
Like you go to a gym and they or a place. You
they're
know,
still
like,
doing that.
So I thought that CrossFit was a Christian exercise program. Because everybody on my Facebook
has a cross.
I'm friends with a ton of Jesus people, right? And so they're like, I'm a CrossFit. I'm like, you guys are really banded together. You know, way
I'm
to go.
I'm a cross too, yeah.
And it turns out, it's just a regular workout thing. It doesn't apply to, just Jesus people.
No, yeah, I don't know what the current thing is.
Yeah, like the video you can buy type of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not even videos anymore. You just do a subscription online and they change the things up more, I think.
I thought I was going to do P90X. I don't remember why. I think it's because I found the resistance bands for cheap at a garage sale.
I thought,
where that guy's failed, I will succeed.
Yes.
I thought I was going to do P90X because I found my belly. And I thought, I should do something about this. I gave it a swift try, and there was 2 minutes of the beginner level. And a minute five, I was out. I mean, I was literally dying. I thought, why have I killed myself for this? This seems foolish.
Yeah. I looked at that guy that was on the screen exercising. He's like, you can be like me. And I thought, that doesn't seem worth it. Look at all this effort it takes to be you.
Yeah. You leave.
You're all sweaty and smelly.
You leave room for desire.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining us on Live from the Path. Here's what we got going on this week. First of all, Trevor Pinnegar is in studio. Trevor.
Hello.
It's good to have you in here. So for folks that don't know you, give them a short introduction as to who you are.
Absolutely. I'm the associate pastor at Federated Church in Bondurant. Went to high school with some of these guys here and, reconnected just recently at a wedding of a great close friend. And so we talked about Jesus things, kids in ball pits and all kinds of things, appropriate and otherwise. Thought that they'd have me on, and I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
That's right on. Now, how long have you been at that Federated Church in Bondu?
About 3 years. Come from a business background. Love the Lord, love to volunteer, and I was asked by my pastor to join staff, and never look back. Here we go.
Right on. All right, so Trevor's going to be in studio all night helping out. We've got some secular Solomon. We haven't done that in a while. So, isn't here. You've had plenty of time to prepare your proverbial skills.
Rats.
And here's the deal. I was listening back on some of the previous shows, and Buva actually had upped his game. And so Buva is not in studio tonight, which means someone's going to have to pick it up.
That's no problem, Ben. I'm always known as the guy that rules this game.
Guessman, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how prepared are you for Secular Solomon tonight?
11 and a half.
Holy cats.
Yeah. Holy.
I'm ready to go.
This is going to happen.
That's bold.
Ready to go.
So we'll do some Secular versus Solomon. Mike, you have some potential Pope style?
Yeah, here's the deal. Like I talked to a guy this week that is in a situation that we've all been in. And like it's
won the lottery.
Well, yeah, and we're all handsome. You know what I'm saying? Like he's just living a dream, you know. But it turns out like he's been battling like this certain sin for a very long time, and this week he lost. He lost, and like the conversation that we had that followed was I don't know. It was just really uplifting to me for a couple of reasons, and I don't know if that wraps all into a Pope style advice, but it was just a life experience that like I realized how good God was behind my back. You know what I'm saying? When I'm paying attention, he's still rocking, doing what he does, and like even when I forget to look, he's just as true as he's always been. And so, like, I don't know, I'd like to share just a little bit part of that story, and we might round that out to a little advice or a little, hey, just keep this in mind when you're getting knocked over by a certain thing that you think that you're failing at. So,
okay, excellent. And then advice on Dear Life in the Path. Mike, did you happen to preview any of those?
Well, I perused one. I don't know. Ben, we'll talk about it when we get there.
Okay. Okay.
I just don't like having my ability to read on display for everybody, you know? I always foul it up. They're like, who wants to read Mark 2? I'm like, oh, man. And then I say Jesus wrong or something. Like, it's always a stupid, silly mistake that I mess up. I don't like reading in public.
There was an article on the that I saw this week about, had to do with congregational either singing or reading. I think it's congregational reading is waning in churches. Like, people aren't doing congregational reading anymore.
They're not doing that either.
Yeah. So
you mean like a dude reading for the congregation, or like the congregation reading together out loud?
I think everybody reading together out loud, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dan, have you, like, they say it's fallen out of vogue. Like, what, do you have any thoughts on why? Why something like that?
Because it's creepy.
It's hard to do.
Like, in college, I went to a couple places, they did it, and I'm like, I don't ever want to do that again the rest of my life. Okay, being a guy from that era, it reminded me of the 70s Planet of the Apes movies, when the creepy people were like, you know, and they just like, I thought, you guys are chanting something weird, and I'm reading it, and it's good stuff you're chanting, but you're sounding like weird.
So it's got a monk vibe to it.
Yeah, I guess
like a cultish monk.
I think everybody's afraid to leave the monotone, right? Like, if you read with gusto.
The monotone and mumbling.
Right, you're the creepo in the room. Jesus, and then, you know, one guy will read it too fast, one guy will read it too slow.
Then there's always the artsy person. And then!
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're sticking out now.
And, it's just so, it's not like I don't see how it should be uplifting. Right? When you say, let's all read the Lord's Word together.
They should do a rehearsal.
We're like, yeah, that sounds great. And then when you actually put it into practice, it is a frying pan of poop.
Maybe the bouncing ball on the screen. Then it'd be like, okay, we can do this.
Yeah, it sets the rhythm for you.
Yeah.
Like
Pinnaker, you do that at your joint?
We don't. You know, we don't. We do it in, we do it on special occasions, you know, Christmas time, stuff like that. We read some stuff together, but.
How the Grinch Stole Christmas, stuff like that.
Things like that. Yeah. Mostly scripture, actually. Oh. But, we did it at a early 20-something service that I used to go to, too, and there was always one screamer guy or something like that who just really wanted God to know that he was saying the words out loud.
Yeah.
So.
Or he brought his own KJV with him, and he's like, he's trying to bust it out of that version.
Oh, man.
While everyone else is reading the screen.
I had the Lord's Prayer showed up as part of some teaching this week, and like I tried to be like, hey, let's give this a shot and say it together. And it was a disaster.
There's four different versions.
It was a disaster.
Wait, are we doing transgressions? Are we doing debtors? Are we, what?
Yeah. Yeah,
and I stuck with the debtors, Dan. Thanks for bringing that up. Go debtors camp.
It's two votes for debtors.
Yeah. All the old people are like transgressions. I'm like, boo.
And I realized I swapped out hallowed when my when I was teaching it to my kids like 5 years ago for great, and which probably isn't quite right. But then I realized like I just replaced it permanently in my mind, and so when. I was about ready to fight for the validity of great, and I thought, no, I just chose that out of thin air as a replacement for hallowed. All right, anyway. So it reminded me, though, the one time that I've heard this done, and I thought, you know what, that's straight up all right. And it happened when I was in Manila. So I was in the Philippines, and like some of you guys have heard this story, but like right when I got to the Philippines, I was going to be there for 6 weeks, and I got there at, 11 p.m., and funniest thing I ever saw in the Philippines, by the way, is I was leaving the airport, in the airport, picking up my baggage and walking out, and there was a sign that said, this is a no wang wang zone. And I thought, what the heck?
Certainly not. Anthony.
I said, I don't know. The laws are unnecessarily strict here. And then I thought, like, I don't know what does it mean to wang wang? And like, could I be guilty of it without knowing, right? Because I didn't.
Have I done it?
I could be guilty of wang wanging in the Philippine airport. And so it turns out, like, I asked somebody later, and apparently, they were saying it wong wong, but it's a, it's like, the sound of a siren. Like a woo woo woo.
Like the vuvuzela.
Not quite a vuvuzela, but yeah. It was, and so what apparently was happening is like important people were coming into the Manila airport, and like drawing a lot of attention to themselves.
Like
with
they
these,
do at soccer games, they're yelling out their little woo woo thing.
Yeah. And so like if you were an envoy or you thought you were a special person, you would have what's a coterie or like who? People around you. Who am I? What am I thinking of?
A coordinator. Your entourage.
Yeah, an entourage. Yeah, yeah. And like they would be making a bunch of noisemakers and stuff, pointing to how important you are.
An entourage of wang wangers.
And that's what the sign is there for. No wang wanging in the Philippines airport. And so I took a picture of it and I thought this is awesome. So anyway, I get into the hotel and it's like I don't know, finally 6 a.m. by the time I'm supposed to get ready to go to bed, and I walk out the hotel at the sunrise, and there's like this sign above this big building that's 2 blocks away, but you could see it right as the sun coming over the edge, and it says "In God We Trust" about 30 stories up, and I'm like, "Ha! The Philippines is awesome, right?" So I decided there that like I got to find a church to go to while I'm here. I'm here for 6 weeks. I can find a church. And so the next Sunday, I just left my hotel, and I just started wandering around. I thought certainly I'll come across something. Something will happen because I didn't want to take a cab, and I didn't know, you know, I didn't even know what I was looking for. So I thought the Lord will have to provide. And so I wandered around for about an hour. I eventually ended up in this church, or I saw a sign that had some sort of phrase that wasn't quite, it was like, come on in, all are welcome here. And so, but there was not a cross or anything on it, but I thought, that sniffs like Christianese. There might be Christianese going on in this building. And so I walked into the first door that I found, and sure enough, there's like a Filipino modern Christian church service going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go in, and it's the most frustrating thing being in.
Wait, did you do any wang wanging when you went in?
I did.
To the church service?
I did not. I tried to. I don't have an.
There's no signs there, right?
I mean, so. It's open. It's open wang wang zone. So the hardest thing about going to a Filipino Christian morning service, like the songs are kind of the same. Like they're singing the same tunes we're singing. They're obviously using the same scripture, but like they bounce in and out of Tagalog, which is their language. And so most of it's in English, and then every once in a while they will say something in Tagalog. As a matter of fact, the pastor told like 3 different jokes, and he would always propose the joke in English, and then the payoff for the punchline would be in Tagalog. And I lied 3 times in that service because I laughed as though I understood the punchline. Because he would say it, and everyone would bust out laughing. I thought, I stick out already. I'm a foot taller than everybody else here, and I'm sitting like in the front row. And I didn't want to look like the guy that didn't find it funny. So I'm like, ha, 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 ha. And my heart darkened that day because I was telling lies with my laughs in the Filipino church service.
And the laugh kept going longer because everybody there is like, he doesn't know what he's laughing at.
He doesn't.
It was a double joke.
It could have been. It's probably aimed at me. It's probably what it was.
The white man exactly. In the front is the punchline.
It started off funny. It got funnier.
I'm fairly certain, too, though, that the Philippines, that's where the priest was on the hoverboard. During a mass.
Ooh, yeah.
They got in big time trouble for that.
No, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was. They're on the front lines. Those guys are on the front lines of the movement of the Holy Spirit on a hoverboard. Here's the deal. You know, but based upon some of the way that the churches or services are set up, like who evangelized there, like which denomination made it there first, because there's just certain things going on in the country. You're like, aha. I see that's carried around for the last 150 years.
What was the problem with the hoverboard? Why did they. Why they frown on that?
I think the Holy Roman Catholic Church might have some tradition in there.
You know, they've
somewhere.
Always been anti-hoverboard.
They've never been hovers.
You know, hoverers. Like that behind closed doors, they hate it, and then finally it leeches out, and you're like, I always knew it. I always knew they didn't like hoverboards. Benedict wanted one. They're like, no, you're out of here.
No, that's why they got rid of him. Yeah. He was regressive in every other area except for the hoverboards.
It's like, we got to sink all of our time and effort in this, boys. This will get everybody back.
This is the make or break it.
The Unitarians got hoverboard. Look at them. They're exploding.
they don't even worship anything. They got growing because of hoverboard. So anyway, very, very unnecessary long story short. So they did a group scripture reading, and they rocked it. I mean, those guys were dead on. They said it together, and like people were not having trouble going to the right or the left, Old Testament style. Like,
but
I mean,
that
they,
was a Catholic church, you said, though?
No.
Oh, no, that was different.
It was like a non-denom, like modern worship service there. You know, big screen, full band, plenty of Tagalogs. And so anyway, like I walked away from that thinking that like having the same reaction. Like generally speaking, congregational scripture reading is weird. But like part of that, I think, is our culture stuff. Is like we stink at it. We stink. We don't talk loud. We don't sing loud. Like we kind of mumble. We hope someone else takes over and we can follow them. But like we're not bold and we're insecure basically. But these guys were loud and they were consistent and like. I mean, they hung in there. This wasn't like four verses either. I mean, they had like almost a whole chapter of scripture from John that they all read together. And I was quite impressed leaving that church service. It's the only time I've actually heard it done somewhere where it was done really, really well. And it had energy and a cool vibe to it. Everything else is either people are kind of slogging along or they're repeating after a guy. And it does. It's very monastic. It's very like a droning. And you're like, certainly scripture doesn't. This isn't the real cadence of scripture. It's this kind of droning.
It's living and active and well, kind of boring.
So to sum it up, if I wanted the last 13 minutes of my life back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In God we trust.
I would have said, I've heard this done well once in the Philippines. You guys?
I think that was the point.
Regale us with more tales, Ben.
I just bared my soul to you. All right, fine. That's all I have.
I feel bad now.
Go ahead, Mike. What you
feel bad for Ben.
Wait. So, Pinnegar, what's going on in your life? Like, what do you have? What are you running into that's of interest to the broad world of ministry these days?
It's just a lot of things, you know. And I work with teens on a daily basis, and regularly we're trying to get into schools, try and make sure that we make our presence known. I'm working through students, though, too, and seeing what they experience. There's so much going on in terms of divided attention today and divided people in general. You know, what I see a lot is that church is now, for a large part of our population, just another activity. Mm-hmm. And it's just on another day of the week, you know. So seeing that and seeing where we put our faith and time and money and energy is disappointing, but at the same time can be encouraging as well. Look at technology. The technology that we have right in this very room, the ability to put on a live radio broadcast, yet at the same time, you know, we got students who cannot put down their phones to save their lives. We're entertained constantly. I've got a theme song that goes with me everywhere I go because I've got this technology tied to me. We're the most amazing, advanced, efficient society ever. I can make dinner in 10 minutes, yet at the same time, I've got an extra 35 minutes and I fill it with complete garbage. So it's interesting what our students have to deal with and go through. And the way that we specialize things now is so unique, too. I was working with a student earlier today, and they were experiencing some trouble because they're very passionate about dance. Dance is something that makes them happy and excited. But it's not like it was once. I remember being young and being a huge baseball fan and being in Little League and playing in Little League. But I didn't remember, you know, traveling teams and weekend tournaments and all these things that took us away from so many different variety of opportunities. So it's just interesting in general what we go through right now and trying to make sure that students feel like they're welcomed back and ready to serve and all those different variety of things. A lot of things going on right now for us. And had an opportunity to meet a lot of great people. I would encourage people to be in fellowship with other pastors, other youth pastors, other different people. So uplifting. So I'm always encouraged to hear you guys talk about the ways that you've gone out with coffee with different ones or talked with different ones and been uplifted. Had a conversation with a guy who's going through a tough time, Mike. I love that. So, yeah, those types of things going on.
So how I like that. Like, it's real interesting to think about, like, the progress of our society and then comparing, like, what does it leave in its wake or what are the consequences of it, right? Because sometimes, like, it's easy to label progress always sounds positive. And generally speaking, it is, but right, like there are consequences, like as times change, right? Things differ, things alter, and things are impacted by those types of changes. And so there's kind of a dichotomy that says, like, if you're not moving with it, you're being left behind, but also, like, you have the vantage point of seeing how our reality, what are the impacts of our reality shifting, and, like, where do we need to stop and take note or assess and say, like, is this actually a positive thing, or how do you do this in a positive type of way? And I suppose what's interesting is, like, coming from kind of what you were talking about, the youth is where it lands, right? Because, like, that's the reality. Like, we are the older you get, the more you're part of shaping the world that you leave behind you or that you're in. Like, you're part of managing it. And creating it and advocating or pushing for it. But the reality of those types of things actually lands on a different generation of which they may or may not have all that much control over. And so, like, they're actually seeing the consequences of our decisions and things. And that's a different reality than the one that I'm in or the one that you're in. And so trying to figure out how to – maybe that's where you actually see kind of that's the rubber hitting the road, I guess. Because like we otherwise have some advocacy of our own realities, but it's pushed onto a generation who are simply accept it for what it is and have to live in it.
Well, I wonder if that's kind of what a lot of different innovators experienced. You know, this technology comes about, and then all of a sudden, you've just got to learn how to manage it. You know, you think of like Einstein or Edison or Nikola Tesla. Were they dealing with issues? This is all happening so quickly that I'm just trying to keep my head above water. I'm not great at Twitter or Snapchat or Facebook, but, you know, our students are. They're spectacular at it. And so where I might have difficulty staying up with the times, they've grown up in it. They don't know anything else. And so let me paint a picture for you. Sunset on the Gulf Coast of Florida. You're sitting on the beach. You know, the sun's about to set, and it feels like that sun goes down in about 10 seconds. And it's just so beautiful and perfect, and you're there with your wife, and you're having this amazing emotional God moment where you're saying, Lord, you are this amazing, beautiful creator, and I don't know how you made this picture happen for me, but I can see it so clearly, and there's no way that this could have been put forth by any other entity. God, you made this. But you look at it from the view or the vantage point of a teenager, and you're thinking, oh man, I got to get this on my phone. I got to get this video right because I'm going to snap this out later. And I want to make sure that when it posts, we get a lot of retweets or a lot of people, you know, post it. So can I get the video right? Can I get it captured the right way? And instead of being still and know that I am God, you're caught up in the movement. What's the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning, right? You grab your phone and you see what happened.
No, we just talked about this.
Mike picks his phone up and reads it.
I do not.
Ignores his wife and kids.
No, my alarm goes off and it says, breakfast with Grace. And that's what I do.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Shame to you.
No. So it's interesting, though, that picture, like, it takes something that is a gift to us and becomes something that we then own. Right? Like, I can take in that sunset.
Yeah.
And experience it as something that I'm to receive. And you're right. Our reaction then becomes, how do I then capture that and then redistribute it out as something that is now associated with me?
Take ownership of something that God created. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I look at how great I am because I got the perfect picture.
Right. And really, boy, think of what a facade your life is, Mike. Think of what a facade it is.
Specifically, Mike, I'm a second-rate guessman, that's for sure.
Right. You didn't create the sun. You didn't invent the phone. You're fortunate that your circumstances even led your salty behind to sit in the sand and look at this thing. The only thing you really did was pull said impressive piece of technology, pointed at the thing in a broad way, and clicked the button.
That's it.
And then you send it out to the world and be like, adore me for this.
Well, see, that
we live a lie.
See, well, that's the thing that he's talking about. And like, when you get to the root of that, it's affirmation, right? Like, do they have? Man,
that's not a teenage problem, though, right?
That's the thing. It's not a teenage problem. Me and the girls talk about this all the time, right? Like, is it good in a room by itself? Is it just as good in a room by itself as it is in a room full of people? Because if it's true, then it's good. That's the way that it works, right? So, like, let's say you did happen to catch this sunset. First of all, I will never capture that, right? Like, I can give it the best shot I can in a million pixels. But the truth of the matter is, I cannot recreate that for you. You missed it. Same thing of people with concerts recording that jazz on their phone. Something wrong with you. You're missing the whole thing. You know, they're like, I got a picture of Aerosmith. Well, I heard the song, and he looked at me. And so that's what happens when you look at him.
No, yeah, it's always weird. Like, you can go online, and there's, hey, there's a bunch of amateur video of the Bon Jovi show. I'm like, of a guy with cell phone using the most rudimentary, of the available technology to capture a concert, I got the rudimentary coverage of the man 20 back using his cell phone speaker, and we're like, yay, can I check that out? I'm like, what?
Surrounded by a bunch of drunks going,
going through a centimeter speaker that the phone gives you, yeah. Right? I was there. It's deafening and awesome, and it's full-bodied, and it'll blow your hair back, and you're capturing it on a microphone, you know, that's fit for a 1920s radio show and putting it on the net. You've missed it, friend. You've missed everything that people are offering, everything that God is offering, because you want to condense it down to a pocket-sized version that you can keep with you.
Yeah, we're perpetuating the inch deep.
Yes,
right.
Exactly,
we're perpetuating the mile wide, inch deep, as opposed to like we're just not. Frankly, we're not good at it anymore. As we stink at going the mile deep. It's true. It's true in relationships. It's true in like how we take in the world. And I say we because I'm indicting. This is true for me. Like I really have to force myself to hang around for a mile deep, as opposed to just be happy with inch deep on 50 relationships, as opposed to having a mile on 5 and then watching that grow from there. It, with the things that we interact with, right? Like, hey, I want to we define well-rounded person as a stretched thin person, inch deep on all those things, as opposed to being someone who is a mile wide on 3 or 4 really important things. And it's just a and it perpetuates itself because I think, Mike, this is what you're getting at, because we seek affirmation and validation and identity all from the wrong places.
Exactly. Exactly. And here's the thing, and maybe that is just a throw of nostalgia to me, but like I go, one of the things that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago was that stupid Renaissance fair that I enjoyed. But like, I mean, there's guys in there making pottery, and that's what they do. They're good at it too, yeah. Right? Like they are really good at it. They love what they do. They're not like, yeah, I'm a part-time computer hacker. I also work in an insurance industry, and then I plow snow in the wintertime. The guy's like, I make cups, and they're awesome. Look at them. They're $40 a pop. You want one? Yeah, I do. You made them, and they're cool, and no one else can make me a cup like that. They can print them all they want in Malaysia, but this guy made a cup that only he can make, and this is what he does. And I'm like, I'm blown away by this, right? Like some of the, like the way that we used to do work in this country with apprentices that like, that's it. You're not just the blacksmith. That's what you do. You are Steve the blacksmith. It basically is your new last name. You do blacksmithing.
And you were the blacksmith from like 13 to 90.
Yeah.
That was you.
And you didn't dabble in maybe cutting your own chickens, because there's a butcher man who cut the chickens. That's not you. And what you didn't do is waste all your time being a jack of all trades and a master of zero, so that all your time was being spent being the jack of all trades. You know how much time that takes up? When really, if you just put your hat down and say, I'm the butcher from 8 to 5:30, and then after that, I'm not the butcher no more.
I'm a husband from the rest of the time.
I'm a husband, and I'm a dad, and I'm a church leader, and sometimes I walk down the road with me and my cow, and we talk life. And that's good times. But, like, there's not 10 neighbors coming over here and 10 guys from over here and be like, hey, do you work on farm equipment? Hey, can you help me roof my house? No, I'm the butcher. I do butcher things, you know? And, like, it's oversimplifying. I get that, right? But there's something about taking a life that was given by God to be... There's nothing about the life that he portrays in the Bible for his kids as being complicated. It never says anywhere in the Bible that says your life's going to be complicated. We make it that way.
Yeah.
We purposely add weird tangles and misfits in there, and like to our own detriment, right? Like we miss joy because we're too concerned that it might be spread out among 20 things. When God says, I got plenty of joy right here, right in this area I gave you. And you're boxing the bubble. Like, just get me out, you know? I talked about the girls about this. Cause obviously, I mean, I got kids and they're grade school and we have technology battles at my house. It's just the way it works. Like, how much? How much is too much? What can they watch? What shouldn't they watch? You know, are they mature enough for this? Blah, blah, blah. All this stuff I'm trying to pan through and decide what I actually think. And like, I basically sat them both down and I said, we're going to read the Tower of Babel. That's what we're going to read. And I want you to we're going to go through this story, and after that I want you to overlay what you do with your spare time and what you do with your technology, and then I want you to come tell me what you want to do. And both of them, well, the younger one, no, she didn't make good decisions, but the older one got what I was getting at, right? Like, just look at what you're doing, look at what you're building, look at what you're replacing, look what you're trying to do without. And I think that she got it, especially the older one. The younger one just insisted that Barbie should, I mean, she has a good cartoon. It's kind of funny. You should watch it. It's not bad for a cartoon. But other than that, like, she got the point that I was trying to make, and she was old enough to kind of start putting that together. Is you know, when you say that we say food, we can cook dinner in 10 minutes, and we entertain ourselves the other 50, that's dead on. That is dead on. No one can even watch the microwave cook anymore. No. They're like, well, I got 30 seconds. Hang on a minute. Need to Breathe put out a new video somewhere in a warehouse. I got to check this out, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, really? Did you really? And like, I'm guilty of that, just like everybody else. Yeah. But mm-hmm. I'm fighting for it. I think it's something worth fighting for.
Well, it's incredible too. I mean,
I'm a big football fan. Big football fan. We're here in the state of Iowa, but I'm a fan of the Nebraska Cornhuskers. I'm so sorry, you know, that not everyone's perfect. But you look at the advancements in technology, even to that degree, you know, how can we make our athletes bigger, faster, stronger? And it's not always positive, but in this case, too, they said, you know, our players need to do this. We're going to test this out. We're going to try this out. We're going to have you guys wear these special sunglasses. And you're going to wear these special sunglasses 2 hours before you go to bed each and every night this week, and especially the night before a game. What they were doing here is they were filtering the blue rays that were coming off of the televisions and the devices, the tablets, the phones, because what they were finding is they had these studies that said these brainwave activities are stimulated. They're not getting proper sleep because they've been watching these devices before they've gone to bed. So their idea for combating that with these, you know, these teens and 20s people was to give them glasses to filter the rays that might actually keep them awake a little bit longer. So, I mean, technology is just moving as fast as you can let it go. Another question, another interesting thing, too, that I wonder about, and I don't know the exact answer for it because I'm just not that old. What was pre-flood life like? There are some people that dispute or talk about the level of technology in the time before Noah's flood. Could there have been computers? Could there have been cars? Could there have been internal combustion engines?
Thank you. That's a great question.
Is that Dan?
That is the best question probably ever in the history of life in the past.
Dan has brought up this exact same
Have you really?
Argument.
Yeah. Wonderful, yeah.
I mean, really? We don't know.
Well, okay.
I know.
It was all destroyed.
If let's say that's even possibly a reality, Noah is the worst shipbuilder ever. It took him forever to build that ship.
It seemed to work,
but
though.
They got CAD drawings, they got ability to get lumber in, and he's doofing
around.
Yeah.
He didn't
around.
Have a workforce.
Oh, he had three guys.
Could he have had a forklift, you know, when he's building, you know, the Ark? And so those types of questions are interesting ones, because
here,
what do you need to rebuild society? Do you need a guy who can make an iPad? I don't think so. You need a guy who can make a fire.
Yep.
So, you know, what direction are we headed? We know Jesus is coming back soon, isn't he? I mean, look at our society. Look at our...
Here's the thing. I was just having a conversation with a guy the other day about, like, human arrogance, right? Like, and Western civilization, definitely. But, like, they were upset. They're like, hey... Because of the droughts in California, and they're like, well, the water's also running low in Las Vegas. I'm like, you built a giant city in the middle of the desert, and you want to know why the water low.
Didn't see that coming.
I mean, what kind of human arrogance goes, you know where we should put this massive city that needs a bunch of water? Probably in the middle of this desert. And then we'll pipe it in from other places, and no one gonna notice.
And they named it Atlanta.
Unbelievable.
All right, hold on. I found the clip of Dan, Dan's Noah of the Future. Hold on.
When's that from?
This is dating back. Hold on. October 14th, 2011.
Yes.
It's the 5-year anniversary of Dan's Noah the Future discussion. Okay, hold on. Here we go.
That's true. Maybe Noah was checking the forecast. He's like, oh boy, he wasn't kidding. We better get on this boat.
Do it.
John Bachman says big rain. Big rain are coming.
Yeah, we always think of him like cutting down trees with an axe. Like, man, that was a big job for him. He's like, who knows? They maybe had a computerized factory, and he's had a, who knows? I don't know.
I don't know, Dan. That's kind of a stretch. I'm not really on board with what you're saying, but
well, I know. I don't even know if I am. I
mean, it sounds.
I often wonder.
It sounds pretty cool and all, but I don't know that I'd give that more than a couple minutes.
Let's just say maybe the Jetsons. There's more truth to that than you know, and that's really our history.
You sure you don't know Tom Cruise? I love a Jesus, Oprah. I love a Jesus. It was a crazy dance. Crazy dance. Future past.
No, the cosmonaut.
I guess when I know what we're doing after the Crazy Love sermon series.
This is my Planet of the Apes upbringing. See, the whole space-time continuum things shift.
Holy cats, what are the odds that he mentioned Planet of the Apes?
This is classic. Hey,
so to be fair, that was universally panned by me 5 years ago, and I feel like I'd be cowardly not to stick with it. that I think that's like, absolutely not true at all.
It's just phooey, huh? it could be. You know, there's a book out there, too, that's called We Are Not the First. And it's by a secular author. It's not by a Christian author. But it describes some archaeological finds that are unexplainable. You know how many people are out there. You turn on Netflix and you see, you know, aliens built the pyramids stuff all the time. So we shouldn't be too surprised that we're finding all kinds of crazy things. But it's a good question. You know, what was the technology like before they had to start over? You know, and that was the reset button, right? And what's our society? How close is our society to that reset button?
I can't take these affirming eyebrow raises from Dan. I can't take them. This Dan's just singing his heart song over here. Like, preach on, Brother Trevor. Preach on. Crazy cosmonaut Noah building the ark.
Right?
Where's the landing gear? We don't need it, Noah. We're using water. Water, but we've been traveling through air all this time. Do your job, Noah. Shut your mouth and build the ark like I told you. I'll take away that righteousness.
I mean, we have to write all this down like a bunch of reprobates?
That's right.
We can just pass thoughts together through our heads. Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path.
I'm not sure why.
Anyway, Trevor Pettigrew is in studio with us. Dan will not be able to be talked down from this high for months, certainly. I don't know what to do with it. Now I'm conflicted with my life. I now have to move some of Dan's stuff into the quasi-serious column. And it's going to change some things about what I think.
We're going to have to make a column.
Okay, Mike, you got some advice?
Yeah.
What's the Pope's house? Someone has mistaken you for the Pope.
No, what?
Yeah, yeah. So I heard this. It was on the net this week. You know, people don't use our Twitter account, but all of a sudden, people were like, "Tell Pope Mike to give me the blessings." And I said, "I don't know what you're talking about."
Well,
it shook out though that they are under the impression that you are the Pope, and the only way that this person can be bought off or stop leaving us alone online is for you to give some sort of advice, like the Pope does when he comes out on the balcony and blesses the people.
Right.
So, Pope Mike, you got to give it to the people.
Well, I mean,
it's for the people.
Yeah, I don't deal with online harassment well, so I guess we're gonna have to do something. I was having a conversation with a guy last couple days, and there was one particular sin. He's had a life apart from Jesus, as we all have, right? And like he's recently come to know him, and it's changed him. It's changed him. But there's still stuff from his past that comes up and stuff that he's still fighting and stuff that he's having a hard time with. And he wins more than he loses, but every once in a while he still loses. And you know, this last week he lost one. And I didn't know that, you know, like I just happened to roll up on him and he was kind of giving me this dead stare. And I'm like, oh, man. So I get out of the car and I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? He goes, look, I've been praying the last 15 minutes. And I need to tell you something, and I need you not to get angry. I go, well, I can't promise that. What is it? What is it? Is it bad? You know? And he said, I messed up, and here's what I did. And I said, he goes, are you angry? And I said, you know, every bit of me wants to be angry, but God's grace don't work like that, and I'm working on mine not working that way either. And so I'm glad you told me. Let's move on, you know? And so we got to do what we were doing, and he was bringing it up, and he was just so disappointed in himself. That it had happened. He's like, I don't understand. I don't want to do this. And these thoughts just come in my head. Like, here's the thing to do. And all of a sudden, without thought process, I'm like, yeah, we do it. And he goes, as soon as I've done it, it's instant shame, instant guilt. And I want to get past this portion of my life, where I'm fighting this. And I'm like, well, you know, I got some good news and some bad news for you. I said, the bad news is, you're every guy I've ever met. I mean, that's just the way it works. It is a fight. It's a battle. And I said, but here's the deal. Like, you own this home, and you let Jesus in it, and he's building walls, and he's building the walls up. And, like, today you let the devil in the front door, and he sat down in your parlor, and he made you some promises, and you said, yeah, that sounds good. And then you went, you tried a little bit of his promises, and you went, no, wait a minute. No, you've been in here before. I know you.
Right. You come in, you fart in a chair.
You act like you own this place. And I said, but here's what I want you to remember, because this is the best part. Not only did you look him back in the eye, you said, I know you. You've been here before. I'm going to ask you to leave, and I'm going to ask you to take that lie I was going to tell with you. And I said, he walked back out the door, smiling, because he coming back. But you told him to take that lie that you were going to tell me to cover it up with him. And I said, that is no small thing. And that don't happen in houses where Jesus ain't building walls. And I said, it's gonna happen, and it may happen less and less to you, that maybe he gets to the front door next time, and you're like, hey man, wait a minute, wait a minute, I recognize you. I said, but you have to, it's not an instant, everything's going to change today kind of thing, but you gave Jesus permission to come up there and set up shop, and he's doing it. And you sent him packing. You didn't let him live there. You didn't let him stay for a couple of days. You didn't say, oh man, as long as he's here, I guess he just as well party. That's not what happened. He got in farther than you wanted. You picked him out for what he was. You told your sin, it's time to go and take that other sin with you that I'm going to use to cover this one up and leave. And like he said, I never thought about it from that perspective. And I thought, crap, I never did either. Like I was talking like I'd believed this for years, only to realize that like this applies to me. Everything that was coming out of my mouth is stuff that applies to me and I am just as guilty of. And I had never put it through that same filter, you know, like, and he has, when he was explaining it, I'm like, he has the exact same heart that you'd hope anybody would have for Christ. Like, why am I such a screw up? Why do I keep doing this? I don't want to do this, Paul says.
Yeah.
Says Paul from thousands of years ago, met Jesus face to face, blinded, taught, learned, spent his whole life martyred. And then here's me. 2,000 years later going, why do I do the things I don't want to do? I don't want to be a part of this, right? And like, I'm watching him struggle with this and not understand how all this grace and hope and love can come from a God who loves him, and he is failing to hold up his end of the bargain, you know? And I'm like, trust me, man, that's weighing, it will weigh on you until you realize that God's opinion of you did not change at all, right? He's like, I'm working on the walls, don't let him in here. And then you'll sneak him in, and then you'll ask him to leave. And Jesus will build up more walls. And like until then, sometimes you got to borrow someone else's walls, right? That's why we have community. That's why we have people that we follow. That's why we mentor people. That's why we follow Christ and take someone with you. Because for a while, they're going to need to borrow your walls too. Because Jesus is working on theirs. And before they realize it, then they're going to have a pretty sturdy house where the strong man don't matter.
Boy, man, I really liked. I never thought about that. Jesus is the renovator. Like Satan comes in, or like something in your life, right? Sin starts to destroy your house, punch a hole in the wall. And by the time you turn around and be like, Jesus, I need help, he's like, I'm on it. I said it right.
I'm on it. I got guys. We're done.
It patched the wall. We're all good to go. Threw out that chair. It's not. We can't keep it.
Yeah. This patched wall, this is what's best for you. I'd like you to stick with that. Please don't let him in here anymore. And here he comes. Jesus goes, I'll patch it up. It's no problem. Don't let him pass the front gate, though. He caused him trouble. And so it was, I guess my broad advice is like, this is not really a cartoon version of, Satan and God. That's not really what I was going for, but it was a point that I was trying to drive home, is that like sin, it just works like that, especially persistent sin, one that has, you feel like it separates you from God to the point where after you've done it so many times, you don't even want to face him anymore. You don't want to pray to him. And like, I've been there. I get it, right? I've learned from my experience with knowing Jesus that that's not an option for me. Even when that happens again, I'm right back down on my knees and I say, it's your son, and I've done this, and I let him into parlor, and you know I was going to do it, and I'm sorry, and I don't want to feel this way, but most of all, I don't want to be apart from you the way that I am right now, and you'll get there. And so my Pope-style advice is, if you're struggling with anything like that, I don't care what persistent sin it is, God knows you got it. His opinion of you did not change. His opinion of you as a son of the King, gracious and loved, righteous before the Father, it did not change. And I know that's really hard to believe, but so is God's love. And so like, if you're willing to buy into the fact that someone would take your punishment just to reconcile you back with that person, back with that entity, just to say, I want you close to me, this is what's best for you, and since you can't do it on your own, I will take all your punishment for you just so you can be close to me. You're willing to buy into that. Then you've got to be open to the fact that his opinion of you does not change based off the sin he knows you're going to commit. He's wanting to edify you and sanctify you and bring you closer to him for your joy and his glory. It's a twofold thing, and that's the way that it goes. And so just don't try not to get buried down in there. And if you're having a hard time getting up out of that shackle, A, you know, that's a perfect thing to be praying about. And B, it's a perfect thing to have other people pray for you about and talk it over with them.
Amen.
There's people that have already been through that stuff. They see what it is, and they know what it looks like, and they know it by name, and you are certainly not the only one dealing with that. So, get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. No kidding. You know, my father always said, you know, it's impossible to sin if you're fully engaged in prayer, if you're always talking with God. I wonder, being in that situation, is it better or worse to surround yourself with Scripture and God and anything that can remind you of the way you should be, or is it more guilt? What's the answer?
ready to go?
I think it depends. Really, to be honest with you, because I've done both, right? I've done both. Right. I've ran and eventually came back, and I've jumped right back into Scripture, and it was pretty gray. It was pretty convicting to me, mm-hmm. and not in a good, helpful, I know I'm loved kind of way, more like...
Your scum kind of way?
I've really done this time, right? Like, I don't understand. Of course, that's just a blindness towards God's love for me and who he says he is and what he does, right? Like, that's a blindness that I temporarily choose to be blind of. I know better. Mm-hmm. I know what mm-hmm. it looks like. I know how it feels. I know the story. I know the way it goes. I know who God is. I know the way he feels about me. I choose to ignore that. I choose to be blind about that and act like it's something bigger than it is. I shouldn't say, I don't want to diminish it, but act like it's insurmountable. And it's not. I don't even do the surmounting. Jesus does all this stuff, you know? And sometimes it's just, you don't know people in your life this gracious, right? There's perfect pictures. There's perfect cell phone pictures of God's grace and love, which are people's versions of God's grace and love. There's cell phone pictures of that everywhere you go. But, like, to take in the whole thing, it's not believable. Like, it is not believable until you've experienced it. And even then, you don't even know if you can trust it. Like, it's so outrageous that the grace that you're given and the way that this God operates, you can't even logically explain it. That's why it's so hard to have that's why I have a hard time with apologetics arguments with people who don't know Jesus. It's a spinning wheels conversation. Because without the grace, it's unbelievable anyway. It is completely not fathomable that love exists like that. And then trying to back it up with science and love that they don't believe in it's a real hard conversation. Unless that's where they do battle.
That's interesting how that kind of ties back to what we were talking to, right? Because like, it's being able to actually grasp something a mile deep. Like being able to get past our shallow understandings of certain biblical concepts, right? Like our, even someone who's like, I don't want to use air quotes here, but like mature in the Christian faith has some varying degrees of understanding of what forgiveness looks like.
Right.
Right. Like, oh yeah, no, I forgive that guy, except for, you know, he divorced me 4 years ago and I'm really pissed.
Yeah.
And
he sucks definitely.
And I'll passive aggressively say things to the kids or Facebook, but, you know, I've kind of let it go. I'm like, no, you haven't.
I think that's maybe why Paul to the Ephesian church, you know, said he prayed that they would comprehend the breadth and the depth and the width, the length of God's love for us in Christ, you know, that we don't get it.
Right.
You know, we can academically, we can fill in the blanks, but there's so much lacking in getting it, I mean, comprehending it.
Right.
And it's just a lifelong process, and then we get to see him face to face and go, oh.
Right.
Why do we have to understand everything? That's a big question I have, too. You know, we talk so much science. We talk so much about how there's... You know, conflicting stories, and science says this, and faith says that, and all these things. But I certainly don't view them as against each other. I view them as in perfect synchronization.
I agree.
In the way that it works, and you read in your Bible, you read in the book of Genesis about how the earth was formed, and all of these different things. It's so funny. You know, I was reading in another book, and it was... I can't remember the name of it, but it was by a mathematician, a person who's from the academia side, and they were trying to say, you know, these different people who are atheists can't disprove anything because they always find themselves going into a field that they don't know about. And what I grasped from that was God is every field in every single way. His sovereign power is so huge and powerful that it's not possible to say, well, mathematically it's not possible for the earth to be done in 6 days, and you're discounting God, and you know that people that are cosmetologists, right?
Makeup and hair.
I love your nails.
They hear everything.
Cosmology, you know, these experts who are talking about how the universe is formed and created and all these things. I was listening to another Christian radio station this morning, and they were talking about energy surges throughout the universe and how they can be so powerful and helpful in terms of understanding angelic beings and angelic things. And the mysteries of God are being revealed to us on such amazing ways if we just open ourselves up to them and we don't act so hard-hearted. Get ready for the fall, right? If you're a person who is saying that these things aren't true. I look at the way that Pharaoh acted towards, you know, the Hebrews, and God hardened his heart on purpose. so that a huge example would be made of him. You know, he keeps, you know, Moses keeps coming back. Dude, this bad stuff's going to happen. I don't even want it to happen to you because we're bros, but, you know, God hardens his heart so that this amazing, tragic thing happens in his family before he allows the Israelites to finally go on to the promised land. It's amazing stuff, the mysteries. It's heavy stuff. It's cool stuff, but that's definitely a mile deep if you're willing to dive into the waters.
Yeah. I think I've had this conversation with our youth every once in a while about science being just an explanation of how God did something. That's really all it is.
Yeah.
And when they get down to it, they're like, that's why this is just a theory. Well, yeah, Jesus operation is not on a theory, right? Whenever they get into a blank gray area and they go, this is why a theory because we can't prove it. And I'm like, here's the deal. If I'm willing to believe of this grace that the Lord produces and that he had anything to do with making this world at all, I can pretty much chalk up just about anything to, yeah, that's what he wanted done, and then it happened. The day that the sun don't move, I mean, if that's what he said was going to happen, that's enough for me. I don't know whether I need to question a whole bunch of stuff, you know?
Well, faith like a child, right? I mean, I've worked so hard to be so smart, and all the guys in this room are incredibly intelligent and can speak well in almost any company. You know, I'm probably not going to talk about astrophysics or anything like that, but at the same time, I work so hard to seem so smart, and yet being dumb is what really gets me there. You know, the ones who will enter the kingdom are the ones that believe like a child, and having that sure faith. You know, I tell my son that I'm going to catch him if he jumps into the water. He believes me, and I believe that if I jump into the water, that Christ will catch me. So, we got to have that faith, right? We make it so hard, don't we?
Yeah. I think we are. Sometimes we spend a lot of time trying to figure out the right way to chase someone who's chasing difficulty because they don't want to necessarily address the simplicity. Mm-hmm. As opposed to kind of just waiting them calling back to the simplicity, we kind of follow them into the woods a little bit. It's not that God, the truth of God or like the reality of what Scripture says is true can't stand up to the veracity of that. It's just we kind of ran ourselves out 5 miles and winded ourselves along the process when we might have just been able to hang out and call people towards simplicity. Like, call people toward, like, true things. I was talking to someone actually today, and they were saying, you know, like, sometimes I struggle with if someone were to ask me, like, why do you believe the things you believe? And she said, I just don't know. I'm not sure what my answer would be. And she said, you know, it's just I can look out into the world and I say God did this, and if God is the creator who did these things, then I want to know him, and the things that he says obviously are true. And I'm like, sounds like a great answer, right? Like, is that not Paul's basic apologetic? Like, the king of apologetics, Paul here, who's writing theology as he goes, and he's like, yeah, no one has an excuse. God created this. We should submit to that humbly. You know, and I thought, like, that we feel a debt here because we don't have kind of loads and loads of things to go back on to chase kind of some of the things that other people want to talk about. And, like, if you're on the base reality that says, Creator God did this, he must be a good God, I will follow him. I think, yeah, it seems to nail it. I feel like you're good, and everything else will kind of flow from there.
Well, and I read here... you know, Dan was talking about Ephesians. I read here in Ephesians. I got one here. It's Ephesians chapter 3. It's verses 9 through 12. Ephesians 3, 9 through 12. And it says, to make plain to everyone the administration of this mystery, which for ages past was kept hidden in God who created all things. His intent was that now, through the church, the manifold wisdom of God should be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms. When I read that last bit, in the heavenly realms, I don't read... you know, right here on Earth, where we can distribute it to the masses, we're not going to know how everything perfectly pieced together. And, you know, not everybody's going to find comfort in that, but let's stop trying to make each other so smart that we ignore things that are so simple.
Yeah, and I guess it also does, like, if we try to strip God of his mystery... then we have positioned ourselves in a relationship with God that is a false one.
As greater than him, that he has to explain himself to us.
Yeah.
I was reading a book.
Well, a David Platt book, and it was funny. There was a part that said, "Don't make God your Lord and personal Savior." I was like, "What? That doesn't sound right. That sounds really counterintuitive." So, you know, I was reading it, and it basically said, "You know, why are we so great that God is searching so hard for us? Is He not going to do these amazing, magical, wonderful things with or without us?" I told a guy a long time ago, you know, I'm just afraid in youth ministry that I'm not going to be there at the right time for the right teen when they really need me. And he said, man, you think a lot of yourself.
Yeah, yeah, right.
that God's not going to do this, because if His will is going to be done, it's with or without you, bud.
Yeah, so. it'll happen one way or the other. And that's one thing that's very freeing, is if we can look out into a wide world and say, God's got it, and He's got people everywhere. And so, like, if you be faithful in the means that He's given you, big or small, and execute those faithfully. Just trust that, like, whatever it is that you're concerned about, He's got somebody on it. So if he doesn't have you on it, trust that He's got somebody else on it. There isn't a reason for you to feel the weight of what is otherwise God. Sometimes stuff that drives us crazy, and frankly, we take it out in unproductive ways, as we can look at and we feel a burden that belongs to God, and we've taken it from Him and put it on ourselves. And that's a lack of trust in who He is. It's a lack of allowing Him to kind of live in the mystery that is Him. And so it's very freeing to say, look, I get to be faithful in the things You've given us, and I want to be, again, for our joy and for His glory. And then I'll leave the rest and just watch as a cool bystander that knows God and can see how He interacts with the rest of the world and see how He does things that have nothing to do with me at all. Yeah. And that's a very cool thing to watch. It's just a hard thing to do, because, like, even as you hear the gospel, we immediately feel a responsibility. It's just our eyes get a little bit, sometimes can get bigger. And so, like, here's the deal. Some people, you have a giant deal. He's got thousands and thousands and thousands of people that your faithfulness in the means then touches. For some people, it's like six. Like, it's what, you know, and that's the thing. Is like, you're continuing to just be faithful in your means and praying humbly and honestly that, say, God, whatever You've got for me, I'm on it. And then just watch Him do whatever it is that He does. And it's cool to just be take a consolation that He's got it handled, and we'll put people on it. He's got plenty of folk.
Yeah, I was talking to a pastor one day, and he said, "What am I going to put on my resume if I ever get a different job? What do I put as my accomplishments? What did I do? How did I improve this community? How did I impact this community? How did I do these things?" You know, it's almost like these things happened for references. See God, you know.
Right.
I don't do anything. He does it all.
I mean, I think it's weird though, right? Because if you look at, the Bible's pretty clear that He calls us. We are saved by faith, so that no man can boast. But, like, directly following that, we are saved for good works. He's got things for us to do. And there is a responsibility as the church to otherwise continue the process of what He has otherwise started in Jesus and will complete in Jesus. And when He calls out, and the Bible continually kind of refers to the people of Jesus' kingdom as holy and as saints, right? That's a pretty consistent reference from Exodus 3 all the way up through Revelation. God does think highly of His people. His people just aren't to think more highly of themselves than of God Himself. And so, like, it's actually kind of a weird dichotomy. As we sit in humble service to a king, and He looks down and says, "You're My holy and chosen people. Get on it. I've got stuff for you to do." Right? And so, like, the stuff we do does matter, but it matters because of who we're doing it for. And so, yes. Although, like, it matters whether we walk in the work, but the work itself is important because of who it was given to us by. Right? And so, like, that's kind of a hard thing for us to understand. Like, God will accomplish His things, and it'll happen one way or the other. But, like, the way the admonition that flows through the words in the New Testament, like, I think shows me a God that says, I just got stuff for you to do. I got good work for setting captives free and taking good news to the world. And it is through My church that some of the things that Jesus was praying in the Lord's Prayer will be accomplished. And I want you to get on it in faithfulness to Me, but the value of that work comes from who is giving it to us and who will help us succeed in it, right? Through the otherwise work of the Holy Spirit in His church, because otherwise, the Holy Spirit as a helper becomes kind of an irrelevant distinction. But because of, like, the way that the Bible describes the Holy Spirit as helping us accomplish otherwise the things that God has going on, like, that's a sweet and holy calling,
that we otherwise get to take part in. And I think that's cool. Like, that's very energizing to remember that, like, the work we have before us is cool work given to us by God to do. And it's motivating to then be part of seeing it done. And I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, hold on, we better get on this Secular Solomon. Hold on.
And now, for America's fastest growing game show, Secular or Solomon?
And that's right, you have stumbled onto America's fastest growing internet game show, Secular versus Solomon. So in case this is new to you, I will give you the rundown of exactly how the game works. I will give you a proverb, a piece of wisdom, and you need to tell me whether it is a secular piece of wisdom or whether it is a biblical piece of wisdom, which we otherwise refer to as Solomon. Mike, I know that you can see my list over my shoulder. I don't want to see any cheating.
I'm facing this way,
here,
Ben.
Here, just scoot over to the side and sit closer to Dan.
Don't tell me how to live.
No, you're going to peek over here. No. Gessman, you're on him. You're Friar Gessman.
Like a hawk.
Okay. Don't you rat me out, Gessman. We've been friends for years.
Okay, yeah, so I'm going to give you the bit of wisdom. You guys can play along at home. It's 1 point for a wrong answer, negative 10. Or excuse me, 1 point for a right answer, negative 10 for a wrong answer. Those are the terms. Who is this guy? Sorry, the next YouTube video that came. You remember that one time we were playing and it was some kind of guy? What was he talking about? The rebuilding of Solomon's temple or something?
I don't remember.
He was awesome.
He had a sweet beard. He had a Daniel 7 beard. That's what he had. All right, so here we go. Let's fire this thing up. First bit of wisdom, secular or Solomon. Stolen water is sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Stolen water is sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Secular or Solomon, Mike?
Solomon.
Mike did for Solomon. Dan Hudson.
I can go either way here, but I'm feeling a Palestinian presence.
Thieving water thieves the Palestinians. Josh Gessman.
We're going secular Spain.
Secular the nefarious Spanish. Trevor Penninger.
You guys were talking about Las Vegas before, not having water. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go secular also, and I would say India.
Secular India, stolen water is sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. It is Solomon, Proverbs 9:17.
Yeah.
What is that? Is that anything in particular, Mike?
Anytime I clear the whole room, I'm going to make that noise.
And the guy who can see the list is in the lead.
Touché. Bring to me stolen bread.
Oh man, I can smell the paganism in here. Nobody knows their proverbs. All right, secular or Solomon. A tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot. A tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot. Secular or Solomon. Dan Hudson.
Solomon.
Dan's in for Solomon. Josh Gessman.
Same, Solomon.
Solomon. Trevor Penninger.
I'm going to go secular.
Secular.
And rotting bones. It's got to be China.
That's going to start a war. Thanks, Penninger. When I think rotten bones and flesh, I think the Chinese.
Built into the foundation of the wall.
Thank you, Internet.
May we mission at your country?
Mike, tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot.
A very rare occasion, but I'm in league with Dan. Solomon.
Solomon.
That's a wise choice.
Here we go. That is, sorry, one more time. A tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot. Solomon, Proverbs 14:30.
Yeah. Proverbs Solomon, 14.
That was on a doily at my grandma's house. Should have picked that one out.
She had a very strange collection. kind of down her doily.
If your grandma didn't doily Ecclesiastes, you were robbed.
She had that with her Halloween decorations.
Bones. Secular or Solomon, if you do not have patience, you cannot make beer. If you do not have patience, you cannot make beer. Secular or Solomon. Josh Gessman.
Secular. Germany.
Germany. The Germans have been pegged as a drunken lot. Pinniger.
I'm going to go secular for the third time in a row. And I'm going Ireland then. There you go.
He's in for Ireland. Pinniger says, if it don't flush the first time, keep hitting that handle.
That's amazing. Show them dry bones, man.
Yeah, if that didn't smell like Ezekiel, I don't know what does, boys. Mike.
Secular and Russia.
Secular Russia.
They're more of a vodka.
Stereotypical drunken nations. Dan,
what are you going to pick? What's one that you're not going to stereotype as a drunken nation when they're proverbs about beer?
Hey, I'm just saying, they may not be a patient lot. I don't know if the Russians are patient drinkers.
I do.
I'm going secular, and I'm going to have to double up. I'm a Germany too. I can feel it.
This, if you do not have patience, you cannot make beer. Secular Namibia, to your shame, Namibia.
I've never heard of it. What is it? What's a Namibia? Manibibia? What is it?
Namibia.
It is an African country. It takes a while to get supplies.
Apparently, they have great beer.
Dang. Secular or Solomon. Here we go. Only a fool knows everything. Only a fool knows everything. Pinneger, secular Solomon.
It's Josh's turn.
No, he fired off the beer.
Oh, he was the beer guy?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go Solomon.
Solomon.
Bold.
Mike.
Yeah. Secular.
Country?
I'm thinking.
Wait, hey, put two thoughts together.
I got thrown off course with Namibia. I'm going to go Cambodia.
Only a fool knows everything. Dan.
I'm going secular, and it's obviously South Korea.
Obviously, South Korea. If you're below the demilitarized zone, you're a fool. Josh Gessman.
I'm going with Trevor. Solomon.
I like what Gessman has done. He's
playing the odds.
He's tagged on. He's caboosed something.
Yeah.
So that way, if he goes down. He takes Pinneger with him. He says, hey, I'm only lost because I latched onto this cat.
Yeah. It's not my fault.
It's like a tandem bungee cord.
Here we go.
He's legit. He's got a title and everything. I got to jump
Wait a minute. Do you have a business card?
I do somewhere.
Yeah, I guess when you made a good move here.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Only a fool knows everything. It is indeed secular Dutch.
Dutch. They're so friendly, too.
But their proverb is on the lookout for a man who thinks he's wise beyond his years. Gessman showed the height of humility and said, I don't know anything. I'm latching onto this cat.
Plain and honest.
Secular or Solomon, a man is commended according to his good sense, but one of twisted mind is despised. A man is commended according to his good sense, but one of twisted mind is despised. Secular or Solomon. Mike.
That's Solomon.
Solomon. Dan.
Yeah, I'm going Solomon.
Solomon. Gessman.
Solomon.
Welcome aboard. Pinneger.
Well, you seem so confident over there. I think that I'll latch on my caboose to them as well.
Finally.
Nice work.
look at the congratulations.
Congratulations, sir.
We all know everything, Dutch and all. Man is commended according to his good sense, but one of twisted mind is despised. It is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 12:8.
Perfect.
Proverbs 12.
Nicely done, boys.
8.
I'll lead us to victory.
Secular.
We need our own group of people screaming our names out when we're walking.
Yeah, we need a wang wang.
I think I'd say that wrong. I couldn't remember the term.
No, that's what you thought it was.
It was about it, right.
I figured I'd go slightly off.
Did those Dutch people copyright that?
It's in the Dutch letters.
I see. Dutch
I've
read the word wang wang.
Yeah. I'm out.
It's a bit stolen from A Fool Says in His Own Heart That There Is No God. And it would imply he knows everything, but an implication isn't a straight proverb.
Nope.
No. No. Stolen wisdom.
See, Gessman knows that.
Dutch.
Secular or Solomon, you don't water a camel with a spoon. You don't water a camel with a spoon. Secular or Solomon Dan.
Why do you laugh?
Who's the camelous people?
Yeah, I'm going secular.
Secular circus folk. Carnies for 800.
Boy, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go with.
This country may not still be in existence.
Oh, because I'm thinking an African continent. I'll just go South Africa because they got rid of their camels. They tried to water them with a spoon. So
yeah,
no, they survived.
It's not a warning. It's a man who's learned.
It's an observation.
Yeah.
You know what we should do? We
guys,
should make
don't
beer.
Do that.
Trial by air.
Gessman, you don't water so a camel with a spoon.
Secular Egypt.
Secular Egypt.
It's still a country, Gessman.
Sorry, it's not a country anymore. I've mistakenly
the Ottoman Empire.
It's still a people, but not a country.
The Ottoman Empire.
It could be the Ottomans.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that acceptable?
Yeah,
is that a country?
No, I'll take it.
Okay.
No, that's acceptable. <All right. laughs> Secular or Solomon? You can't water a camel with a spoon, Pinniger.
I'm gonna go secular, and Assyrian. Throwing things out,
bold
throwing
move.
Things to the wall.
the
not a real country, but
yeah, but we're running low on countries. Mike's gonna be able to pick out. You don't water a camel with a spoon.
I'm going Persia.
Okay, Persia, mm-hmm.
Or the Japhethites,
Jebusites,
Japhethites,
the Hamites. All right, here you don't water a camel with a spoon. You know this if you are an Armenian. Armenia.
Course.
Man, they hold a special place in my heart, and I've not shown any loyalty at all.
Yep. Here's the deal: the way to win this game is to own an old globe. I got a globe from my dad's house because he was moving; he's going to leave it behind, and so I picked it up and I got it home. And I looked at it and I thought, I can't use this globe. Yeah. Like this, Eastern Europe certainly doesn't look like this anymore.
Yeah.
This is not helpful.
Even Jamaica's moved slightly.
What? No, it has not.
I don't know. I was just
Jamaica's not shifted.
Right. I don't know the fault lines and whatnot. I'm not a science man. I just say things like, God moved it. It's fine.
That plate tectonics is really
that's right.
accelerated in recent years.
Let's see.
Do you think if Jamaica got bigger due to like unforeseen events, they would try to throw a letter in there to the name so it would still fill out the whole country when you wrote it on a globe?
No, they would expand the kernel. The kernel of the font would expand so that Jamaica would take up more space.
See, sometimes they just give out diplomas, and I'm like, I don't know if I really deserve this. I'm not going to say no to it, but
that does bring up a question though that I find interesting. Can you colonize a heap of ash, as a volcano explodes, right?
Yep.
Like if that creates new land masses, is it all right to hang out by one and then colonize it so you can have?
I assume it belongs. It belongs to the nation that bore it.
It's in the international waters.
Yeah,
people are purchasing islands in the Pacific.
I don't want to spend money on it though. I just want to hang out by an active volcano and claim it for
a flag on it.
That's the thing. You're at least going to have to put money into a flag and a design and whatnot.
Yeah, and prepare for war.
Yeah,
I don't know much.
We're on the way. There's free land.
Yes.
I don't know much about Pompeii, but I don't think hanging out near an active volcano is the best choice.
Yeah,
their life was preserved.
That might cut down on the war though. I mean, there can only be a handful of idiots standing around by an active volcano looking for land.
Actually,
purchase.
No, yeah, but think of the guy that's willing to fight you in that scenario is a crazy fool.
Yeah.
And so, like, he's probably the most dangerous of the lot.
He might have showed up with just teeth and fingernails looking for action.
Yeah. If there's a guy sitting next to him who's like, I want that too.
Yeah, volcano's rolling, boot and rally, we're going in.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That might be the wrong place to get it. I should just go take his land that he abandoned to come claim that volcano.
True.
Unless he left some rabid squirrels or something to defend it. All right, secular Solomon. This is right up that alley. The memory of the righteous is a blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot. The memory of the righteous is a blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot. Secular or Solomon Guessman?
Solomon.
Solomon. Pinniger.
Solomon.
Mike.
Solomon.
Dan.
Solomon.
The memory of the righteous is a blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot. It is indeed Solomon, Proverbs 10:7.
Reminds me of a worship tune.
Looks like you guys hit your caboose to the right thing.
The leader is whoever gets on the track first.
Yeah, how about that?
Captain Guessman, a toot toot.
I feel like his name is an indication of what just happened.
He proclaimed it boldly. That's the way to do it, Guessman.
Quick and boldly.
Here we go. Secular or Solomon? Are we almost out? No, we got two more to go. Here we go. A rhinoceros is not burdened by the weight of his own horns. A rhinoceros is not burdened by the weight of his own horns, secular or Solomon Pinniger.
I'm going to go secular, and based on the last posting of your show, I would say Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe. I'm not a good one-liner, man.
You knew that before you started.
Zimbabwe.
Yeah, you've done it.
Go ahead, Mike.
I'm going to go secular as well, and I'm going to say Tanzania.
Dan, is this true? A rhinoceros is not burdened by the weight of his own horns?
It is true, because I read about it in an old Aztec proverb book.
And you're saying
Aztecs.
Aztecs. Because as the Aztecs could speak with animals, the rhinoceros looked at him and said, man, these are bumming me out.
It's written on their walls.
This is of no burden to me.
Hey, Mexican rhino.
Yeah,
make note. I don't know. Have you ever had something like, this is going to lead to poor places. Have you ever looked at any part of your body and be like, hey, this is bumming me out? Like,
like, I guess that's why I started doing Tybo.
That's right. That's where Tybo comes in.
Yeah, okay, let that die. Gessman, a rhinoceros is not burdened by the weight of his own horns.
That is secular.
Egypt.
I don't know. You got that on the brain.
Yeah. I just keep with it. It's got to hit one of these times.
All right, you're flushing the vinegar toilet.
Yeah.
All right, a rhinoceros is not burdened by the weight of his own horns. It is indeed secular Nigeria. Nigeria.
I said Tanzania. That's pretty close.
It's time to move the
Zimbabwe,
Atlas, boys.
Yeah.
You need to move on. There's got to be some reruns of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego or something. You guys can up your game.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
It really was.
All right, here we go. Last one. Secular or Solomon, the ruin of a nation begins in the homes of its people. The ruin of a nation begins in the homes of its people. Secular or Solomon, Mike?
It's actually pretty darn close to a quote that I read from Mother Teresa here recently. I'm going to have to say that's Proverbs.
Solomon. Solomon. Dan Hudson.
I'm going to go secular Hillary Clinton.
Solid. Solid, Dan.
It's not a country, Dan. She's
Clinton
not her
nation.
Own country.
Clinton nation is out there.
Could be someday.
They got their own signs.
Dan's stubborn refusal to name a country will be an automatic deduction. Guess what?
secular. And we're going France.
France?
Yeah.
The ruin of France is started in the home of a poor migrant French baker. According to Gessman, he's called a pox upon your houses.
That's correct.
And Penninger.
I'll go Solomon, but I'm not confident.
I'm not sure how to take that. Gessman, keep an eye on him.
Hey, they've
I can't see him. From
they've sainted Mother Teresa. Does that sway you?
She's pretty awesome.
Done.
The ruin of a nation begins in the homes of its people. Quoth the Ghana, nevermore. That is secular Ghana.
Dang it.
Secular...
That's the country with the star.
Yeah. Turns out Mother Teresa, Saint Teresa, can't be trusted.
She was
now,
in that part of the
America's
world.
Saint Teresa. Game show. Secular.
And
or
you again, you would stumble onto America's fastest growing internet game show, Secular or Solomon. Hey, if you want to check out past episodes of the show of Secular versus Solomon, just go to the website, lifeinthepath.org, search for Secular or Solomon. Either one's probably going to help you out, and you can watch. We've played Secular versus Solomon with Righteous Vendetta, with Chandler Knutson. All kinds of folks been in here for Secular Solomon, and all with varying degrees of success and international affront. So feel free to go back, test your wisdom, and start picking up on those proverbs. Yeah? Healthy bits of wisdom. Whole broad point is to say, hey, look, do we know where wisdom's coming from, right? If Grandma put it on a doily, it don't mean the Lord said it. So let's dig into our Bible, know what the Lord is saying is wisdom. And that's what Secular Solomon is all about. Mike, I think we got time for like one.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Dear Life from the Path, my husband has purchased different pieces of equipment over the years. He recently bought a small tractor that he's very proud of and enjoys using around our property. He also has purchased a large trailer that he often uses to haul his equipment and other things. His problem is friends who seem to think that they can help themselves to his stuff. They actually have the audacity to say, I may borrow your tractor, trailer, etc. tomorrow. I find this to be rude in that they are not asking, they are telling him they will. I told him to say he doesn't loan his equipment out, but he can't seem to be able to say that. Do you have a good comeback that he could use without offending his friends? Do you have a zinger? Is that what you're asking
for?
Can
I zing my spouse?
Yeah, like a good jab? She's asking like, yeah, she's trying to give her husband ammo to reply to his borrow friends. His friends that come over and say, hey, I'm going to borrow your tractor tomorrow instead of, can I borrow your tractor tomorrow?
Hey, so can I rephrase the question?
Yeah.
My husband is gracious with his stuff, and I'd like him to stop being that way. Can you give me something harsh that I may say to him that he can pass on to these people?
Yes.
Is that the root of the question?
Yeah.
Because you notice she didn't say, hey, they return it back in poor condition. Because, like, I would say that if that's what was going on. It would help make the case that you shouldn't just give your stuff out, right?
Right.
But, like, she didn't say anything about how they treat the equipment or anything. It's just they assume that they'll be able to borrow it. And
she's not even saying he dislikes it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he doesn't seem to care.
She just doesn't like it.
The issue is not the husband has an issue with people borrowing his stuff. It's more of an issue of people are rude about asking.
Yeah.
I think so.
At least from her perspective.
From her, yeah. Right. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, I do this to Ben all the time.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to come borrow your car. Yeah. Or I need to come pick this thing up. And, like, I just had this conversation with one of the girls because they had somebody, they said someone stole something from her lunch. I'm like, well, they didn't steal it if you gave it to them. So, there, that fixes that problem. Be generous. Give it to them. No one stole, no one can steal anything from you if you give it to them. So, you don't have a problem now. She goes, yeah, okay, good enough.
Yeah, I think the question here is relationship. She doesn't have the relationship with his friends, and he does.
Yeah.
So he's not, you know, he's like, well, yeah, whatever, take it. You know, I mean, they probably had that conversation when she wasn't around, and so that's why he's not. Because I'm thinking if he really didn't want him to, he'd say, well, no.
Although, yeah, I mean, it's fairly simple to phrase that as a question, right? Like, I mean, I'm talking, I do that with my brother.
Right, right.
I've known every day of my life, you know, but like even my good friends, I will say, hey, man, is there any chance that your truck isn't busy on Saturday? I kind of need it for blah, 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 blah. Is it available?
Yeah.
You know, and if you can phrase anything like that where you're putting the onus on the person that owns the equipment, they appreciate that and say, yeah, that's no problem. You know, that's just simple tact. And so if their friends don't have that, then, you know, they could probably brush up a little bit. But that doesn't change the way you act.
I'm just immature enough that I will give anybody anything. But if they expect it, I'll hold it back. Which is my problem. That's more about me than them. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's an immaturity thing.
Points, Dan.
Go back on the Aztecs. Couldn't think of a country. But I'm saying, you know, it's like maybe it's a pride issue or something.
Yeah,
Where all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, if you would have asked me, I would have given you anything you asked for.
Yeah.
But because you expected it, no.
That's right.
Like, it kind of feels like you're feeding that behavior. Like, I somehow can't control what that guy said, and frankly, I want to give it to him anyway. But, like, I really feel like I shouldn't reward such a thing, so what do I do? It's like, but in either case, I think she is, if he doesn't mind, then she shouldn't mind.
Yeah. I'm with that.
Anybody have a differing opinion? Something needs to be said to the boys.
No.
We're solid. Here we go.
Yeah.
Secular's advice says, you, not your husband, appear to be the person with the problem.
Ha!
Nowhere in your letter did you mention that he thinks he has one. If he resents what these friends are doing, a solution might be for him to tell them to talk to you about borrowing the equipment so you can refuse for him. Yeah, that's the way to take ownership of your house, boy. Hey, go talk to my wife. She's going to say no. That's terrible.
That's weird.
Here's the deal. When I was a lesser man, I used to say crap like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, if somebody asked me a question that I was probably okay with, but I knew my wife would probably veto the plan, I would say, I don't think my wife's going to be on board with that. And now that I've been married a little bit longer, I say, no, I just don't think I can do that.
Yeah.
There's no there's no reason ever to deal with your people and then blame your wife for your decision. You're a grown man. Although, I mean, you know the deal. If she's going to say no, you better just hit it off the pass and be like, I can't make it, you know, and that's cool. That's the best way to handle it. Not saying, hey, Frank, can I borrow your tractor? Well, you're going to have to talk to my wife about that. Well, okay. That's awkward.
Okay. All right. Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us this week. We really do appreciate it. Big thanks to Trevor Pettigrew. Now, Trevor, if they want to, someone said they love you. You've got sweet tones here on the radio, and they're interested to know more about you. Where can they run into you on a Sunday morning? How can they hook up with that? And maybe if they wanted to, I don't know, email you or something?
Yeah, they can join me at Federated Church in Bondurant, Iowa. BondurantFederatedChurch.org. And you can find us on Facebook. We've got a Facebook page, Federated Church in Bonnaroo. There you go. If they want to get in touch with me, they can try and message me there. Or, there you go. There you have it.
All right.
Get in touch with me that way.
Awesome. Thanks for coming in, Trevor. Hey, big thanks to you guys for listening. As always, if you have any comments on the show that are good and glowing, shoot me an email at info@livefromthepath.org. If you have any complaints, put that on the Facebook. It generates traffic.
Yeah.
So
people like to see slanderous items.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if it's not true, I mean, I'd appreciate, well, I mean, if Christian, you should not do that. But if you're going to do it anyway and you're not a Christian, I don't
you
really
can
have
phrase it in like, you'll never believe what happened on Live from the Path.
Yeah. They said fart.
Yeah. They probably said words that aren't legit.
You know what's weird, though? It's like, I actually don't, I don't say that. I don't like it. I don't like my kids to use it. It seems overly aggressive to me.
What, fart?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I like wins and toots and things. But it seems like if the Prince of Darkness were going to do something into a chair, he'd probably do it with that description. I don't know why. That just was what it felt like to me.
Hey, do you guys fart in here?
We don't. He doesn't toot, I guess. Anyway, that's what goes on here. And leave that on the Facebook.
Hey,
generate some commentary.
Hey, guess what? I got a Halloween joke for you.
Ready for it.
Okay, ready? How does Moses make his coffee?
You got me.
He brews it.
Hey.
Okay, now hold on. Act like you know he brews it. That's the answer. Okay. Hey, Guessman, how does Moses make his coffee?
He brews it?
No, the Lord provides, Guessman. Oh. Come on.
Immature.
Very good. Did the kids use that?
I tried to impress it upon them. They weren't having it. What's the joke I gave them? Hold on. I had another Jesus joke that I thought was funny. And I don't remember what it had. The punchline was, How do you argue with Satan?
He brews it.
You say, yeah, way. I get it. He's like, it's not great. I mean, it's like B-level bench type material. The rest of the jokes are terrible.
So I'm calling bingo tomorrow morning. I call bingo every Tuesday morning over at Brick Street Market in Bondurant, Iowa from 8:30 to 10:30. But we do a joke each week, and the one last week was a lady came into a church, and she was talking to the greeter, and the greeter said, "Where would you like to sit?" And she said, "I want to sit in the front row." And the guy goes, I don't think that you should sit in the front row. The pastor's really boring. It's going to run on forever. You're not going to like it." And she said, "Do you know who I am?" And he goes, "No, who are you?" And she says, "I'm the pastor's mother." And he said, "Well, do you know who I am?" And she said, "Well, no." And he goes, "Well, that's good." And then he walked away.
That's a good joke. Speaking of jokes, hey, if you ever get a chance to, I'm not going to tell another one, but we're going to leave. I promise.
You.
The show's
Thank
over.
Yeah.
But like, if you ever get a chance to search up on our YouTube channel, Sad Little Church Joke, it's an excellent joke.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good.
Another blast from the past.
Yeah, Sad Little Church Joke. Check it up on the YouTube Live from the Path YouTube channel. It's good.
All right, thanks for hanging out with us. Hit up livefromthepath.org for all those past clips and performances from the show. And we will see you next week. In the meantime, though, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.